A summary of my spiritual beliefs and understandings. I suppose this is the part where it gets really interesting, forcing myself to write down what I believe in and why. I want to stress from the outset that these are my beliefs, my faith. I do not for one second claim, well, I don't claim it to be the only truth, but it is my truth. At the time of writing this book, I have not read the Bible in its entirety, or, for that matter, a single spiritual book. Why I have not read a spiritual book, I do not know. Many times I've tried to buy one from a bookshop, and I'd wander around looking, but never really felt attracted to a book. I cannot and do not claim to be knowledgeable in the world of theology. What I have come to believe is based on my experiences, my interactions with religion, various churches, and different people. I have cobbled this all together to create a clearer picture and story that makes sense to me. To make sense to me, it must be logical, it must be simple, it must be factual, and finally and most importantly, it must resonate with me and by me in my gut, in my soul. The biggest problem I have with most religious people is their blind belief that their views, their faith, and their truth are the only way. If this were true, then surely we would all believe in exactly the same things. Nobody, and I mean nobody, can actually prove their religion and or faith to be the only truth. If this were possible, then surely by now this would have been done. But it hasn't, and it never will. I have no problem in debating issues and accepting the other points of view, but if they do not resonate with my gut, then I don't accept them. That does not mean they are wrong, simply someone else's view. Tolerance for others is not a natural human approach, and is something that took me a long time to learn and accept. There is a God, but only one God. I believe there is a God. There is only one God. I believe he is called by different names, by different peoples and sects. Some call him God, some Allah, some Jehovah. It doesn't matter what you choose to call him. What matters is that you believe in him. My belief in God is the only thing that I believe in faith. Nobody can prove that there is a God, and nobody can prove that there is not a God. For every argument you put forward to prove or disprove his existence, there is an equally strong counter-argument. I believe there is a God. There is only one God. I believe that God created the universe, as we, in our limited way, know and understand it. If he were capable of creating our known universe, then surely he is capable of creating other universes. Whether he has or not, I don't know. But I believe it is possible, and more likely, probable. I believe there is a heaven which is our goal and final destination, but first, we have to earn our right to be there. Earlier, I spoke of our use of God's true name, Yahweh, and Jesus' true name, Yeshua, which originated from the Hebrew language. If you would like to do some research, I suggest you visit the following websites. http://www.yhyh.com/cross/cross22.htm http://en.wikipedia.org/wiki/Yahweh http://www.hiscovenantministries.org/yhwh.htm The Bible. I believe in the Bible. I believe it is a kind of roadmap for us to follow and learn from. I do not believe that it is totally accurate, As it is a collection of the works of different authors, put together at some later stage by publishers, the works were written over substantial periods of time and in different languages. In the translations and interpretations, you will find huge areas for potential error. The bottom line is that you must read and interpret the Bible, and what resonates with your gut is what you accept and believe in. Too many times I've heard preachers, priests, and pastors claim that God has given them an interpretation and understanding of various passages in the Bible. How do you know that God actually did that? I could equally claim that God has given me my understanding of life. Does that mean you must believe everything exactly as I have written it? No. If whatever anyone says resonates with your gut and makes sense to you, then internalize it and believe it. Multiple journeys, or soul lessons, or karmic debts. I believe that each one of our lives, our total journeys, have been preordained by God. It is clearly mapped out with the start and the destination. The route we take is entirely dependent upon the choices we make. In simple terms, we have a starting point, that is, say, Johannesburg, and a finishing point, which could be Cape Town. How we get to Cape Town, that is, what route we take and how long it takes us, is a result of the life choices we make when confronted with different situations. I believe that God has a unique plan for each and every one of us, but He allows us the freedom of choice on how we choose to live it. I believe we all have multiple journeys. By this I mean that we do not just live once on earth and then die and either go to heaven or hell. I believe we each have to learn many different lessons, and we have to learn each and every one of them regardless. These lessons can also be called soul lessons or life lessons. Exactly how many journeys we have to experience is something I do not know. Perhaps somewhere between 30 and 200. Whether this is true and or accurate is not important. What is important is that the number of journeys we undertake is entirely up to us. If we learn our lessons quickly and do not create karmic debt for ourselves, we will graduate in fewer journeys. So what exactly is karmic debt? It is the negative things we do in each journey, for example, theft, murder, hatred, cruelty, etc. We each have our own personal logbooks, known as our Akashic Records, which is a record of every thought, word, or action we have ever had. These karmic debts are therefore recorded. We have to pay the negatives back and clear the slate in order for us to finally reach our ultimate objective, heaven. The concept of karmic debt makes sense to me and addresses the issue I brought up in the chapter entitled Growing Up, the issue of a murderer who genuinely feels remorse before he dies, but also accepts God in his life. This is all well and good, but the debt is recorded and will have to be paid for in future journeys, so there's no getting off scot-free. I like to simplify things, so my analogy for our multiple journeys and soul lessons can best be described as trying to graduate from school. We have to go through our multiple grades or journeys, starting in grade 1 and graduating in grade 12. During each grade, we have different subjects or soul lessons that we have to pass. But if we fail, we have to repeat the subject, learn the lesson. I do not believe that we follow a fixed sequence of the curriculum. That is, I might have to learn the soul lesson of jealousy in the early part of my journey, perhaps grade 2. But you may only need to learn this lesson in the later part of your journey, perhaps grade 8. However, we all need to learn the soul lesson of jealousy sooner or later. A big difference between my school analogy and the real life is that when we fail the subject, that is, we do not learn the soul lesson, we have to repeat the lesson, and each time we repeat it, the lesson becomes more difficult and the consequences of failure worse. Take a moment to consider this in your own life or someone else's life. Have you ever noticed how sometimes the same sort of trouble or difficulty is experienced over and over again, like history repeating itself? Take the soul lesson of substance abuse and dependency as an example. Each time that person is meant to learn the lesson, that is, overcome the habit, and does not, the next time they repeat the lesson, it seems that much more difficult and the consequences that much worse. They suffer and struggle more, and lose more, such as family, friends, assets, etc. Until such time that the soul lesson has been learned, it will have to be repeated. And if it is not learned on that particular journey, that is, this current life on earth, then it will have to be repeated in the next journey or journeys. So what soul lesson do we need to learn? I'm not sure what the definitive list is, but a good idea of what the lessons are can be found by reading the roadmaps we have been provided with in the Bible, the Torah, or the Quran, etc. Besides the original Ten Commandments, if we put our mind to it, it is not that difficult to compile a quick list of these soul lessons and to stimulate our own thought process. I suggest the following examples. Substance abuse and dependency or addiction to alcohol, drugs, cigarettes, medication, gambling, etc. Commitment. Humility. Jealousy. Rejection. Infidelity. Trust. To love unconditionally, partners, spouses, parents, children, etc. Not to judge. Non-judgmental. Finances or debts, and to manage this. Greed. Poverty. The key to my understanding of these soul lessons is that we all have to learn them, no exceptions for anyone. Choices. We have to make them. Throughout our journey, we will be faced with hundreds of situations where we will have to make a choice. The choice we make influences our journey. For each choice, there are always consequences, some good, some bad. What is important to understand is that God will never make your choice for you. Only you can do that. Not making a choice is in fact a choice, as you choose not to make a choice. There is nothing wrong with praying to God for guidance, but understand, if he wanted to make the choice for you, he wouldn't have bothered putting you in the position to choose. Another simple analogy I use is that our journey is like a game of snakes and ladders. The ultimate objective is to reach to the top left-hand block, block number 100. The roll of the dice is like our choices. If we make the correct one, we climb the ladder and move up. However, if we make the incorrect choice, we fall down the snake. Jesus Christ, our perfect role model. I have clearly stated that I believe in God, Yahweh, and I believe in the Bible. In an earlier chapter, I mentioned that I had once become a reborn Christian. I would like to confirm that I do believe in Jesus Christ, Yeshua. I believe Jesus is the Son of God, just as I am a Son of God, just as you are. My understanding of what Jesus represents is perhaps a little different to how other people perceive him. I believe Jesus is the role model of what we should aspire to be and how we should live our lives. He was perfection. He managed to achieve in one human lifetime what we cannot do, what we need multiple lifetimes or journeys to accomplish. There is not a single human being who has ever lived a Christ-like life in one journey, because it is not possible. God gave us Jesus so that we have direction, an example by which to live our lives and to make the choices that he did. Once we have successfully learned all our soul lessons and paid back our karmic debts, we will graduate to become a true angel of God based in heaven, providing guidance to others who are still on their journeys. Earth is hell, and hell is earth. I don't believe there is a fiery hell as such. I believe that earth is our hell. To me, this makes sense, as there is not one person who has ever lived a perfect, easy life. Everyone has their own drama and challenges to deal with. Doesn't matter if someone is enjoying a life of financial comfort, because there are other soul lessons to learn, creating their own problems and difficulties. So if we keep on coming back to this tough life to learn and grow our souls, if it's meant to be a difficult challenge each time and we have to repeat these lessons if we fail, then could this not be a version of hell? Soul ages. As we learn the soul lessons on our multiple journeys, our souls mature. Joya Pope wrote in her book, The World According to Michael, that there are five levels of soul aging or maturity, namely infant, baby, young, mature, and old. She goes on to say that within each of these five ages, there are seven levels as well. That is, a third level, young soul. The concept of soul age makes sense to me, and generally, I am now able to recognize the possible soul age, age only, not level, of most of the people I spend time with. The interesting challenge that soul age can represent to us is the scenario where a child might be a mature soul and a parent a young soul. In fact, I know a family where this is the case. What is important is that it does not matter whether you are a young or old soul, as it does not make you any better or any worse. At school, did it matter to you that someone else was in grade 2 when you were in grade 6 or vice versa? No, the other person is merely younger or older than you, which does not make them any better or worse. All we need to do is to try and identify the soul lessons we are meant to be learning and learn them as soon as possible. As important, if not more so, is to learn not to be judgmental. This is an extremely difficult challenge, as it is natural to judge other people. We judge their behavior, their looks, their dress sense, their relationships, their personalities. There is hardly a person around who does not voice their opinion about and judge other people. When you're driving in your nice fancy car and you're stopped at the traffic lights and a beggar approaches asking for money, what thoughts cross your mind? Sometimes pity, sometimes irritation. Or you think they should get off the streets and get a proper job. Most people have negative thoughts about such people, but perhaps consider that this person might be an old soul learning the soul lessons of humility. Interesting perspective, isn't it? Probably one of the most enlightened attributes to have as a human being is to be non-judgmental, to accept that everyone is a unique soul growing and developing, and that we all have exactly the same soul lessons to learn. What another soul might be learning right now is something you might have already learned, or perhaps will only learn in future journeys. We're no different at our core. We're only different in the levels of our learning and knowledge. Soul families, soul genders, karmic relationships. I believe that just as we have human families, we also have soul families. Soul families give us a common bond and link to each other. We tend to gravitate to one another. You will find the friends and family members that you feel closest to generally share similar values and beliefs as your own. There is a good chance that they share a common soul family with you, as the soul bond is far stronger than any other. I also believe that in each of our journeys, our roles and even our genders also change. If God is of no specific gender and we are created in God's image, then surely our souls have no specific gender either. On earth we have genders, so in our earthly journeys we have to conform to that. But inherently, I do not believe we have a specific gender. I believe that we sometimes experience a connection with another person that we can't always explain. It's like, you know them, but you cannot recall when and where you met. I understand this to be a karmic connection, which simply means that in another journey your paths were linked in some way. Your souls are recognizing each other. Gloria and Roxy are very, very real examples of this in my own life. I instinctively knew them and understood them, and within days of our relationship starting, it seemed as though we'd been together for a long time. How does each journey begin? I believe that before we are physically born, we know what soul lessons we need to learn and what karmic debts to pay. We have a clear understanding of what we are setting out to achieve. Depending on what soul lessons we need to learn, we are given appropriate bodies, genders, and environments that will facilitate our journeys. As I've said earlier, our journey is preordained by God and planned to absolute perfection. I believe our souls only take possession of the fetus when it is about 3 months old. Why 3 months? Well, I'm not sure. But to me it seems the most logical time, as a fetus at that stage is taking a human form. When we are physically born, we lose all knowledge and memory of our journey and its purpose. This also makes sense, because if we knew beforehand what we had to deal with and the soul lessons to be learned, then we'd be well prepared to learn them. They are soul lessons. Therefore, we have to learn them with our souls and not our heads. How does each journey end? Obviously, each journey ends with the death of the human vessel used for the journey. What I always struggle to understand and accept is why some people who have lived exemplary lives might die at relatively young ages. Some Christians claim that God does not take lives, that Satan does such horrible things. This doesn't make sense. That God would allow someone like Satan, if he exists, that is, but I will address this later, to take one of his children when that person was destined for heaven anyway? If God wanted that soul to leave earth, then surely he would do that himself and not rely on a hitman like Satan to do his dirty work for him. So having said this, my belief is very simple. Once we have learned our soul lessons and paid back our karmic debts, why would we want to hang around? Using my school analogy, if we are able to pass the grade after the first term, why would we want to sit in that class for the rest of the year? Wouldn't we want to graduate and move on? Also, if Earth is actually our hell and not meant to be easy, then why would we want to stay here? I believe that if we have graduated from this journey, then God removes us to prepare us for our next. Obviously, it's sad when someone close to you dies, but to me, I feel the person is lucky, as I assume that he or she has graduated and has therefore achieved his or her objectives. So I'm comfortable when someone dies at a young age. Perhaps that person only had one or two soul lessons to learn on the journey and did so. Good for them. But there are other roles that God has for other souls, which require them to live a long and full life. I think Nelson Mandela is one such soul. For him to become the world icon and inspiration to millions of people that he is, he had to endure a very hard life. What he has achieved as a result of his journey is absolutely amazing. Mother Teresa is another example of this role that God has provided us with. Déjà vu. Links to previous journeys. The literal meaning of the French term déjà vu is already seen. It can be best described as an overwhelming feeling or familiarity with something that shouldn't be familiar to you at all. There are many different theories as to why we have these experiences, but I believe it is a flashback to a previous journey. The best piece of advice you could ever receive. Life is so incredibly confusing and difficult. We have so many different religions, beliefs, faiths, and spiritual views in the world. Christianity on its own has many different sects or denominations. People create war and death based on their spiritual beliefs and faiths. So many of our written roadmaps, such as the Bible, the Torah, and the Quran, have been subject to uncounted different interpretations by different spiritual and religious leaders. So, what must we believe in? How do we know who to listen to? On the one and only occasion in my life that I asked someone for advice, I received the best piece of advice ever. I mentioned it In an earlier chapter, when I phoned Lawrence while trying to make sense of my confusion with my relationships with Gloria and Debbie, what he said was that whatever decision I make, I must trust my gut, not my head. He said the gut is your soul, your spirit, that talks to you, and no matter what, you must always listen to it. Right now, if you reflect on your own life and think about the important decisions that you made instinctively, that is, with your gut as opposed to your head, I'll bet the best decisions were the gut ones. So the gut decision is the right decision, always. But there's a rider to this, and that is, even if the outcome or consequences of the gut decision may appear, with the benefit of hindsight, to have been less than ideal, it was still the right decision. The reason for this is that you made the right decision, which put you in a situation to experience and or learn from something that was meant to be in order for you to grow. In other words, even a wrong decision is the right decision, providing it is a gut decision. Is helping someone always helping someone? One of the most important lessons I have learned in the last couple of years was that helping someone excessively is the worst thing you can do for them. There are people like me who enjoy helping others. It's like a calling, but sometimes we fail that calling. At least I did. I spent most of my life helping my brother. No matter what, I was always there to pick up the pieces. I helped him financially for more than 20 years. Whenever he got into debt or needed money, I gave him the money. Whenever he had legal issues to deal with, I sorted them out. Whenever he needed help with his work life, his personal life, his marriage, his children, whatever, it did not matter, as he always came to me, and I always helped him. And all the while I thought I was being the good brother. I was being kind and generous. But in reality, with the benefit of hindsight and my new understanding, I was making things worse for him. I was making him weak by always supporting him. By propping him up all the time, I didn't let him stand on his own two feet. I never allowed him to learn and grow. I was good to him, but I was bad for him. When I finally realized that I was not helping him by helping him, I withdrew that support, although I never withdrew my love for him and my involvement in his life. Therein lies our challenge. We need to be able to help each other, but we also need to know when we are disempowering someone. We need to know when to step back and allow that person to learn and grow from their challenges and experiences. If you're not sure when to let go, then trust your gut. It is always right. A universal law to live your life by. In the Bible, there is the most wonderful guideline that was given to us. Do unto others as you will have them do unto you. It could be called a universal law, as it applies to everyone, irrespective of one's faith or religion. In my personal life, I've always tried to live according to this truth. To me, it covers absolutely everything and every situation that you could possibly find yourself in, where other people might be involved or affected by your actions. Before making a decision or acting on one, decide if you would like the same thing to happen to you. It might just change your mind. Does Satan exist? I'm not sure about this. I believe that we make choices which have either positive or negative consequences. I believe some negative choices are evil or morally wrong, such as murder, rape, and theft. If we allow ourselves to listen to an inner voice that leads us to do these terrible things, does that mean we are influenced by Satan? To me, if he does exist, then so be it, as I always try to live my life by the universal law. If I do, however, make negative choices, I don't blame Satan. I blame myself for succumbing to weakness and thereby not learning my soul lesson or, alternatively, creating some more karmic debt for myself.